All right, that is Wrangler Brutes off their brand new LP entitled Zulu. That song is called Crossing Chaos. What the fuck? I'm Mike Thorne. I'm back from vacation, and this is Maximum Rock and Roll Radio. I'm sitting here with some fine members of Signal Lost, and they're going to be on the show a little bit later to play some of the bands that they've played with on tour and also some new good Texas punk. But I'm going to start off the show today with a set of Japanese stuff, and this is Forward off their brand new LP.
And actually, we're starting off Bathrop Spears' Broadsides. That's coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stay with us. A special session on police violence in Santa Cruz in the last week.
So high, traveling fast and free. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you see. Can you see the hunger there? Strikes without a sound. Can you see the food you burn as you circle round? Way high, so high, all the world will cheer. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you hear. Can you hear a child cry, body filled with pain? Deadly sores when cures are there, how much fuel remains? Way high, so high, spaceship made of steel. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you feel. Can you feel the money down as you sail through space? Can you feel how many die when you win the race? Way high, so high, traveling fast and free. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you see.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting on the net at www.freakradio.org. You can call us at 831-427-3772, us being just me this evening, alone in the studio, but eager. Well, yeah, I'd like to get your calls. Again, 427-3772 here in Santa Cruz. Or you can go to pagesincolor.com, which is a chat room, where I can actually check you out there, and we can actually have a dialogue if you find the phone is busy. I see a phone call is coming in, so somebody is taking me seriously, or else, who knows, could be a bill collector. Let's see what's happening here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Can you hear me? It looks like... I don't know what's cooking. Try again. Perhaps we can get through on the line. Or perhaps you can. So that's going to be sad if we don't have a operating phone line tonight. I hope we do. I heard a couple things coming out of the phone. I hope that others did too. I think we did. I think we're getting that out. But try again. 427-3772. And let's see what we can do. Let's begin with a few interviews from the street, and then we will go into the subject I promised earlier. By the way, for those who are noting such things, this is the November 11th Veterans Day show. If any veterans want to call in, of course, you're welcome. And local veterans associations are considering how we can get together, we being, for example, Vets for Peace and Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, to get the Santa Cruz City Council, our local legislative body, to do something about the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban that criminalizes poor people every night. Tonight, in the rain, for instance, there are only 39 spaces for shelter, that is floor space on the floors of churches in the ISSP program, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 folks who are homeless in the city of Santa Cruz, but a law that makes a $54 crime of falling asleep after 11 o'clock at night or covering up with a blanket. We have another call. I'm going to see if I can actually get you this time. We have a bad wire here, which may have been fixed. So let's see. Again, the number is 427-3772 or www.pagesincolor.com. And here is caller on try 3. Let's see how we're doing here. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Are you there? Oh, boy. I appreciate you trying. If you can hear me, I'm glad, and I can't hear you right now. So looks like we got phone line difficulties. I don't know why, but if any technicians are in the area, come and help out. So it looks like that phone is history. So we're going to rely heavily on my fine presentation skills, as well as a lot of interviews from the streets and a bit of recorded music and material. So you can also, if you are near a computer and caller, if you can get to a computer, go to www.pagesincolor.com, www.pagesincolor.com. Click on the chat room and try to get through that way. I see the phone is ringing again. I'm going to try to answer it, but I'm afraid we're going to have the same problem as before. Let's see what's up here. Hi, I'm hoping you're there. Hello? Hello? I don't see. I think. Wait a minute. I think I hear you there. Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? You know, I thought I heard something just for a moment before you hung up, but can't really tell you what's cooking with this particular phone. So you can jump on the chat room. You can email me. We're going to try one more time with this phone and see what's up. Hi there, phone caller number 5. Are you there? Hello? Hello? Turning you way up. Hello? Yeah, you know, I can actually, I think I see what the problem is for those of you listening. You actually, I'm going to have to boost this up so high that it looks like it's distorting, but it's not. So if for callers, don't give up. Keep trying to get through 427-3772, and we will go for it. While we're waiting for that call, let's begin with an interview from the street. And while I'm playing this interview, it's going to be easy for you to get through to me because I'll be off the air, so feel free to call me on the phone here, and I will talk to you directly, and then we'll try to put you on the air as well. Stay with us.
So it's about 4:15 on October 3rd here at, goodness, Union Grove Music Corner of Pacific and whatever this street is, and we're talking with Kunas. And Kunas, you say that this morning you were graced with some more new tickets?
Yeah, they said it's illegal to panhandle or fly a sign anywhere in the state of California, which I told them was bullshit, and they gave me 2 tickets after that.
Who was the officer who did, do you remember?
One was a black guy, one was a white guy. I didn't get the names.
Officer Perry, the black guy, also known as RoboCop?
Yeah, RoboCop, that's him.
About what time of the morning did this happen?
About 10 o'clock.
What kind of discussion did you have around this ticket?
I told him he was full of shit. He should take me to jail. I wasn't going to pay the ticket.
Did you sign the agreement to appear in court?
No, I didn't.
Did he give you a copy of the ticket?
Oh, yeah.
Can I see it?
No, it's full of feces right now.
Oh, dear. Well, at least you put it to some use. Now, you say you got a second ticket.
Yeah, for panhandling. Same charge.
And how long after the first, or did you get it?
It was the same time. It was panhandling and flying a sign at the same time.
I see. And did one of the officers initiate this, or was it specifically Perry? Or?
It was Perry, but he had an asshole behind him, like, agging it on, like, give him more tickets, give him more tickets.
Did anyone else see this? Was anyone with you?
Yeah, my old lady. She's still there flying a sign.
Where did this happen?
Over by Denny's on the one ramp, on ramp to the one.
And having ticketed you, did they then threaten to arrest you?
No, they didn't.
Did they say that there had been a complaint?
No, they didn't.
Did they offer to buy you a meal and perhaps a cot for the night?
No, just ridicule.
How long you been in Santa Cruz?
A week.
Well, welcome to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
We've been talking with...
Glad to be here.
And again, you are...
Kunas.
Thank you, Kunas. We're talking with a man with a very expressive sign. It's a bum, you better run, and a design of coins in front of his sign. How would you describe that design? Not a man who wants to say anything? Okay, so no hassles, though, so far. He shakes his head no. Okay, well, bum on, as they say. I'm on the street here at 510 in front of the infamous Al Frescos, which last week gave 10% of its proceeds to the Free Radio Santa Cruz Transmitter Fund in honor of their bust. However, I'm being told that this is a secret report. So I'll take the secret report, then we'll take the open any open parts of before the secret report.
Let's do the secret report first.
All right. So report from the street, putting aside all this secret stuff, is
T. Roger, et cetera, sheriff candidate. And my report is, I think it's really cool. Yesterday I was coming down the Pacific Avenue, and there was these guys with a television style camera interviewing people, and they were saying, if anyone has just one question per person to ask President George Bush, then ask the question in front of our camera. We'll give you a tiny slice of pizza. I went for it, and the question I asked was, President Bush, our research indicates that we know the reason why you scheduled the elections in Iraq for January is that after you lose the election here, which you know you're gonna, you want to go over there and run for president of Iraq. So will you admit it now before the election that that's your plan, yes or no? And that was the question I asked. Some other people also had intelligent questions. I also wanted to ask him the question that since he was AWOL from the Air Force as a lieutenant, would he reactivate himself as a lieutenant, go over there and live under his own stop loss, stop movement program, just be stuck with the war till it ends?
Hard questions for a hard president. Roger, did you enjoy your slice of pizza?
Yeah, it was pretty good, and I really enjoyed it because it came from participating with... their great objective of give hard questions to the president. Since I did my share of helping them with their program, then I didn't mind so much helping eat their pizza either. So I double enjoyed it because they put it in the context, ask a question of the president, then get a piece. I double enjoyed it. It was really good.
Munch on, as they say. Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
So these are scattered interviews from early October, but I have some more recent stuff I'm about to play concerning incidents that happened around Elman Pacific on Pacific Avenue across from Streetlight Records. And it looks like another caller attempting to get in. Let's see if we can accommodate. Let's see how we're doing here. Elm Street. Actually, I think this is there's an interview right before the Elm and Pacific interview. There are a number, actually, of interviews from that corner. That's called Punk Corner sometimes. It's a corner where there's been a number of, you heard an interview earlier from that corner. Number of tickets been issued for panhandling within 3 feet. There's folks who have a sort of a grungy look about them, and they're not wearing the most, politically correct, up-to-date, fashionable clothing. Or maybe it is fashionable in some circles. I don't know. But there are folks there, and there are reports of police violence from that corner. That's what we're going to play in a moment. First, this.
Okay, well, it's about 3:05. I'm in front of IQ talking with
Alvin Lucas.
And Alvin, you're here on a kind of a shady Sunday, still sun, but the sun is dropping here on Pacific Avenue. It's November 7th. You got a sign for sale, $30 a bike, and can you still get into the ISSP program?
It's a church program. I can get in from Monday to Friday, but on the weekend you got to have a medical record. So that's right. I just signed up for it. Since I just won my case last week. So
how many people does it serve on your average days?
Well, at the homeless shelter, probably about $120, $200, $300.
How many people get shelter, though?
Not very many. So you got to sign a list and keep coming back and checking. If you don't check in 2 days, you miss 2 days, you don't, they have to take you off the list and like, you have to start all over.
This is for when you sign up at 4 o'clock?
Yeah. 4 o'clock, yeah. Okay, they eat up on the Core Street at 4 to 5. Then, well, of course, I got lucky and got in the River Street shelter, but I was going to church school. But I can't get in there now. Well, I can now since my SSI approved, but I got to get a wait for the SSI to give me a letter. So.
What kind of SSI problem have you got?
I got a bad back, and I got cancer through your body, but it's arthritis. I don't know how, it's a big name. I can't pronounce a big name. And my back is called a, it starts with a curve, but you got a proper name like scoliosis or something like that. I can't say that name either.
Fair enough. How are policemen treating out here?
I don't have no trouble with them.
How long you been out here for?
About 2 or 3 weeks down here. I used to panhandle on Church Street, but now Church Street's getting dead, so I come down
here.
Yeah, I come down here, more traffic.
Wow. And see anything you want to report to the community through free radio?
Well, just over the weekend, come down here, have a good time, but watch out for drunks and stuff, because there's been a lot of fights and stuff down here. That's all I got to say.
Have you seen any fights today?
No, not today, no.
Last week?
I heard about it, but I wasn't down there last week.
Heard about any accounts of police violence, or?
I don't know. I heard a lot of people got arrested. Through the Halloween, a lot of them got arrested. So.
Have you seen any violence in town yourself?
No. Nope.
And are you a man who usually sleeps out?
Yep.
I can't. Any hassles for sleeping?
Nope. Well, lucky I wasn't there. I was already tore my tent down, but while I slept out, going towards that Felton on the railroad track, the ranger gave my friend 2 tickets and come back next day and give him another ticket. But lucky I tear my tent down and pack it up, put it up, tear it down, put it up, tear it down. So lucky I just do that every morning, or I'd have got a ticket.
Ticket. And we've been talking with
Albert Lucas.
Thanks, Albert.
Yeah, that was Alvin. We are going to, we have waiting on the line for us, we have Jerry Henry who's going to be talking, and I'm going to put Jerry on in just a moment after a little bit of music, because I've got to catch someone at the door. So stay with us.
I've been here more than 6 weeks now and haven't fired a shot.
Well, here he comes, his bow legs angling, both 6 guns drawn and dangling, in the walking, talking, rooting, tooting, shadow of John Wayne. Why, he's a genuine silver screen hero, not like Jimmy, Dick, or Cyril. With a monogram, a silver bullet, or a brain. Once our nation was so strong, why didn't we lose the Viet Cong? Why we should have showed those...
Let's see, perhaps.
Well, I don't know if I'm being heard over there or not, but this Jerry calling in, and I picked up his presenter yesterday, and it's thicker than anything I've ever seen him do. And the portrayal as Beanie is crazy. He's clearly a disabled person who lives in our community. He's just on the hate level. And I think he has definitely hit the category of hate journalism. I hope I'm on the air. This is personal to me, the fact that being the same with myself, I am so sick and tired of the hate projected on the disabled. I haven't had as much involvement as I have with the homeless. Now, I'd encourage everybody to pick up Metro and take their coffee and throw it in the garbage. This has got to be an uprising. I mean, the vendors went across the line. That's about it, Robert. If you heard this, come back where you were and let me know.
Yeah, we did hear you, Jerry. Yes, you were definitely on, and unfortunately you couldn't hear me. I'm talking both to you and to the audience, but they can't hear you now. So my apologies to everyone for this kind of delayed stuff, but your message did get out. You're saying this goes far beyond what's been done before. You can't be heard on the air, so I've got to really kind of cut this short. But, you know, I can try to put you on again if you are. Then you won't be able to hear me. Do you want to say something more? Okay. Right, he's calling it disability groups. He's calling advertisers. I'll try to get this patch working, or hopefully somebody will by the next show. We can talk more. Hang on a second. We'll talk to you in a bit. Just a moment. So, what we've got here is phone problems, and I'm going to play a little bit more of this ancient but interesting Mark Levy song, which is actually about Ronald Reagan. So stay with us.
We're still lost. Then we recognize the commie chinks and the Taiwanese called us all finks. He grits his dentures and saddles up his horse. Cause he's our would-be president.
Thank you. Brothers and will shortly be seen starring in The Voice of the Turtle.
Very good boys.
And that's from Mark Levy's early 80s album, Rising Wind. We may play another song or two from that. This is Freak Radio, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides, and we are pretty much without a on-air phone line, although maybe we can do it if you just want to make a statement. If you call in, I think we can hook you into the phone, but we just can't talk back to you. There's not much communication. But that doesn't mean that we can't kind of work something out, and it doesn't mean that it isn't going to be fixed. It also doesn't mean that you can't possibly call in on pages in color if you have a computer, by which I mean, computer in. I'm not sure what the words would be. The subject of police violence downtown has come up a number of times. I've mentioned it on the Sunday show earlier. I do a show from 9:30 to 1 on Sundays. And hopefully, by the way, we'll have Jerry Henry, the guy you just heard, hopefully in hopefully you heard him. He's a fellow who's been banned from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center because he has apparently offended some sheriff's deputies and has held to account the Aptus Coffee Roasting Company and the Sheriff's Department for the harassment of youth and particular activists in that public space area there where they're essentially trying to privatize it. And that's been discussed here a lot. But he will be discussing the DiCenzo cartoon more on Sunday. That's the cartoon in this week's issue of Metro Santa Cruz, which mocks, ridicules, scorns, and demeans some of our favorite folks on the street, including Umbrella Man Robert and Jeannie, a woman who often is bent over on her bike. I don't have the cartoon with me. I noticed it briefly and then just sort of passed on because it's the kind of thing DiCenzo's done before. He has his hates and his loves, and if you're the target of his hate, God help you. I've gotten some nasty stuff from him, but luckily he's also turned his acid pen on people like Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin, I think to great and important political effect. So I'm glad he's done those kinds of cartoons. Anyway, on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, and I think I mentioned this in the past, the longest thread I've seen in some time is made it onto the website. It's called Police State in Santa Cruz. It was begun by Lalo Fagruvi, and she talked about an incident of police misconduct, which actually she discussed here on Free Radio. Actually, I interviewed her on the street, played the tape here, and it's archived. I believe it's the November 4th show. Is there such a thing? Yeah. I think it may have been the November 4th show that I played it on. And if you want, you can go there to www.huffsantacruz.org. Huff is the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. But www.huffsantacruz has all the old shows from the last 4 or 5 months, or 2 or 3 months, thereabouts, of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, this twice-weekly show concerned with civil rights in Santa Cruz, as well as some other issues, too, police misconduct. Anyway, it's a long string here about the functions of the police department and police abuse, and it's gotten a couple of individuals who represent themselves as being police officers, or at least one, whose name is Amused Officer. That's what he calls himself. And he says he is not from Santa Cruz, lives and works in a city of about 900,000 in the metro area, and has his own opinions about many things, particularly skeptical, critical, and sarcastic about those who are critical of the police department. And it's interesting. It's sort of like going to the Sentinel website. If you've ever been to the Sentinel, it has a couple of chat room type. It's not they're not really chat rooms. They're email. Well, I show my own illiteracy, my own computer illiteracy, by not knowing the words to describe these computer websites where you have a chain of responses and counter responses on a particular subject, and you can find that on the Sentinel website. And there's a kind of a Republican Party mentality, to kind of describe it, conservative mentality, where the police can do no or very little wrong, and There's a lot of attacking of activists. So this is what you find on this particular indie media thread. But it's interesting because I think it has prompted people to call in and report cases of police abuse, misconduct by the Santa Cruz Police Department and other police agencies. So I'm going to play a few interviews from the street discussing that very subject. And you can make your own, draw your own conclusions. I have not done no further research on these issues other than simply record the testimony of the people involved. First is a fellow named Clay Tanner and his associates talking again from Elm and Pacific. And here we go.
All right. So here we are. We're back at... Is this, what do we call this? Punk Corner? I don't know what it's called.
What? I know it's exactly
Elm and Pacific. Let's be specific. At Elm and Pacific. We're talking with
Clay.
And
now, you have showed me some wounds that you received. You showed me a wound in your back.
Got two bumps on my head and the skin knee also.
And you have got...
It rocked my face right here.
I see up there's a like scab under your next to your right eye.
Yeah, and my wrist is like twice as big as the other one.
Okay, you talked about your right
my right wrist, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why don't we begin with you? What happened?
I was standing on the corner right here, and the pigs came up, pushed me, asked if I was resisting arrest. I wasn't even under arrest at that point. They pushed me over, fucking dragged me on the ground. We fought for a minute or five, and fucking, yeah, they fucking took me to jail, maced me, fucking threw my head on the ground, fucking scraped me up like you can see right here, you know, that's what they did.
Scabs on the right side of your face.
That's all due to the pigs.
Now, when did this happen?
Last night at like fucking 8 o'clock, or night before last, at 8.
Which was it, last night or night before?
Night before last.
And what happened? This was on tonight, is Sunday, so it's Friday night?
I just told you. They came up and pushed me over.
What prompted it?
Nothing. They absolutely nothing. They wanted a fight. That's all they got. And they got it, too. I gave them a fight. That's what they wanted, and that's what they got. Yeah, they came up and instigated a fight with me, pushed me, fucking said...
How many police officers were there?
Two of them.
You know their names?
I don't even know the arresting officer's name. I asked when I got released from jail. I didn't get read my rights until I was getting released from jail.
What were you charged with?
Drunk in public and resisting arrest. And I told them to take a breathalyzer test. I wasn't even drunk. I told them to take a breathalyzer test, and they wouldn't do it. That was just their you know, false, you know. They were trying to fucking bust me, and that's what they got. They did get me in jail. They did. They got me eventually, but... I fought him anyways.
How long were you held?
5 hours. I went in at 7 o'clock at night and got out at 12:30 at night.
You have your booking sheet with you?
No, I burned it last night.
And what's your last name?
Tanner.
And what's your court date?
I don't even know. I burned it.
Okay. Now, you were a witness to this?
No.
You were a witness?
I was here for a little bit, yes.
What's your name?
Jason.
What did you see, Jason? What did you see?
Well, I came up here because I was eating soup and sandwiches at the church back there, and I came up, and he was arrested on the ground. The cops were roughing him up really bad, and I asked who it was, and they told me it was Clay. And I turned back around. They already had him in the car, and then...
You snapped a picture, too, while he was on the ground.
Yeah, I snapped a picture as they were pulling away.
There's a kid with dreadies who has pictures of the whole thing.
What's your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Zoe.
And so... Again, about what time did this happen?
Well, the sandwich is coming at what? 6:37.
Yeah, we get fed at 6.
Yeah. So about 6:30, 7 o'clock it happened.
And what you saw when you came up was where exactly did this happen? Was it right here?
Right here on the corner. Because I was right there on the other side of the fence, well, because they feed at that church right over there.
Right.
And I came up and it was happening right here. They had him on the ground.
Police officers were involved.
By the time that I came up, there was between about like 9 or 12 police cars sitting here. I don't know how many officers in each car, but I know there's at least like 9 or 12 cars.
Was there a crowd of people as well?
Yeah, there was a crowd on this corner, and there's also a crowd on the corner across the street over there.
Did you hear people say anything?
Yes, everybody was screaming police brutality.
The girl was telling me that she got hit with a billy club while, like, he was, the officer was pulling back to, I think he was swinging on Faith at the time. A girl was telling me that she got hit in the back because he was swinging back to hit someone else with his billy club, and she was completely innocent. Just
are we talking about? Let me get your story in a moment. No, that's good. So, did you see anybody swinging with a billy club?
No, I missed that at the time. By the time I had walked up,
observe when you walked up.
When I walked up, I saw him on the ground.
Clay Tanner on the ground.
Clay on the ground, and he was fighting for them to try and get the cuffs on him, and they pulled the mace out and maced him. And then I turned around, asked who it was, and I came back, and they had him in the back of the car. By the time I looked back around and found out who it was, and then I don't know, I walked back around the corner to tell whoever else she was back there, Zoe was, and all my other friends who were back there. I went to go tell them what was happening. I came back up here, and there's still crowds, and everyone was still angry, but I didn't see anything happening specifically.
How long have you been in town? Again, we're talking with...
I've only been here for about a week now.
Have you seen any other instances of police violence?
Yes, an old homeless woman actually got beat up on the beach underneath the pier
Thursday.
An old homeless woman got beat up on the beach because she was sleeping there, and the police... She got up to move and started to walk away, and the police asked her to stop, and she went, so they came up and beat her with their billy clubs.
Now, were these Santa Cruz police dark blue? Were they sheriffs, green, or were they light blue? Do you remember?
They were Santa Cruz police.
Yeah. Zoe, you were a witness?
I was up on top of the pier. Friends of ours were down on the beach because they were sleeping on the beach too. And they came up and told us that the old lady that was sleeping down there had gotten beaten up really bad.
So neither of you witnessed this directly, but you got this from your friend.
Yes, our friends were standing there while it happened, and we were on top of the pier. We saw the police go down because we saw them park their car and go down under the pier. And they were, you know, blue uniformed.
About what time of day was it?
This was real early in the morning. About 8 o'clock?
Nine.
Real early in the morning.
How far away were you?
We were up on the pier.
Like, just up the stairs.
At what point along the beach? Right where the main pier goes out?
The wharf. The main pier that sticks out.
So you have a hungry, hungry, hungry hobo's choo-choo sign with a little train track and a smiling character with a piece of pizza.
Yes.
How are panhandling returns coming along?
It's not that great in this town, actually, but I guess it all depends.
Zoe, how long have you been in town?
I've been in town about a week.
Two of you travel together?
Yeah.
Has he been abusive lately?
Never.
Has she been abusive lately?
Once in a while, yeah.
All right, then.
That's a unique opinion.
So have you seen or heard of any other instances of police brutality while you've been in town?
The day before the old lady had gotten beaten up on the beach, so make it Wednesday. A kid got beat up right on this corner, and Chris was here for that one. His friend Mike got beat up.
I was here for both.
Tell me what happened. We're talking now with...
Chris Kinney.
And Chris, I think we talked about this earlier, but I don't think I had a tape recorder at the time.
No, you didn't.
And this was on Wednesday the 3rd.
The 3rd.
And what time of day was it?
When I talked to you?
No, when this incident happened.
It was probably around 1 o'clock or so.
It had to do with the burning of a flag?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, someone came down and gave me and my friend Dirty an American flag, two American flags, and he wrapped one around his waist, I guess, when I was across the street, and set it on fire. And he stomped it out, and the police officers came down here, and while a few of us were protesting, and said that the flag was stolen, and told me, my friend Mike, and my friend Dirty, his real name's Aaron, to sit down, and my friend Mike wouldn't sit down because we were peacefully protesting. So the officers told him to sit down again, and he wouldn't sit down. He kept protesting, and I think it was six of them kicked and punched and tackled him to the ground right on Pacific and Elm Street. And
is it Aaron that they did this to?
No, this was Mike. And
Mike's last name? Is that available?
I don't know Mike's last name. His face hit the curb right here on the planter box, and he had a bloody face when he stood up, and he had a cut forehead and a bloody nose. And all we were doing was peacefully protesting,
And what were you protesting?
Against the fact Bush won the election.
And what was the reaction of the crowd as you protested?
As we were protesting, we had a lot of support, actually, from civilians.
And, again, this happened around 1:30?
Yeah.
In the afternoon?
Yes.
And how many police officers were involved?
There were, towards the end, there was about probably 12 officers and about six cars.
And what, do you remember any of the conversation that happened?
Yeah, I talked to a few officers. They asked me if the flag was stolen. I said it wasn't. It was given to us. And they're still supposedly investigating the situation to see if it was stolen.
And did they research and investigate to see if it was stolen?
All they did was ask the person the flag was stolen from, and the person said that the person that stole it had a mohawk and camo print pants, and they asked my friend Aaron if they suspected him most of all because he has a mohawk and he has pants with a pocket that's camo print on it.
And did they arrest him for stealing this property?
No, they didn't. They detained me and Aaron.
And how long did they detain you?
About 30 minutes.
And you said they also took Mike down and smashed his head against the...
They arrested Mike, yeah.
What was he arrested for?
I think it was resisting arrest. I'm not sure.
And has he reappeared?
He reappeared. He was only in jail for about 5 hours.
And did he get treated for his injuries in the hospital or anything like that?
No, he didn't go to the hospital.
Is he around? Have you talked to him since?
I've talked to him twice.
How is he?
He's... The night he got out of jail, he came down here just to see if anyone was still protesting. I still was. And he just wanted to say hello to me and tell me he was out of jail. And then he went to go to sleep because he felt like shit.
How's he now? Have you seen him lately?
He's doing better. He still has a bloody nose, though. And he still has a cut on his forehead.
What about middle-class people passing by? Did you get any support from them?
I had a lot of honks from the cars. From a lot of different people.
How about concern about the way the police were acting? Were others concerned about that as well?
Across the street, there was about 100 people lined up, and there was about 100 people on this side of the street just supporting, yelling things out, and or just staring, just watching.
Did you see any other people who were witnesses that are here now to that incident?
Yes, I do.
Who would they be?
Aaron's here.
Where's Aaron?
Aaron's right there.
That's Aaron? Hey, Aaron.
Dirty.
I am interviewing again. Remember we talked the other day?
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of run through that shit again. What your name is?
Aaron.
And you were detained for
having a flag that was supposedly stolen.
And tell me some more about what happened.
Well, me and my friends were standing on the road. And we had a flag. I had a flag that was upside down on a pole. They had some signs, and we saw a cop, and we walked to the sidewalk. And five cops came. They told us to sit down. I didn't know what for. They said supposedly my flag was stolen. I didn't know it was stolen. I didn't steal it. Somebody gave me the flag. They told us to sit down. My flag. One of my friends didn't sit down. They tackled him. And they gave me a...
That was Mike?
Yes, Mike. They gave me a bunch of shit. And he kept yelling at me, saying I'll be detained for stealing the flag, which I did not steal.
And how long? You were held for about how long?
15 minutes, maybe.
And why did they eventually release you?
Well, probably because I didn't steal the flag. They said they were looking for somebody with a mohawk with camouflage pants. I have a little piece of camouflage on my pants, and I have a mohawk, and they detained me.
Now, were they abusive or brutal, or were they courteous? How were they?
They were abusive to Mike, not to me.
And was anybody like falling down drunk or being aggressively hostile to them?
No.
What did the signs say that were being used for protest?
Honk if you hate Bush, or yeah.
Yeah, honk if you hate Bush. I don't really remember the other one, but Chris might be able to tell you. Chris had the sign. I didn't. I know. I said honk if you hate Bush. I don't really remember the other ones.
Your name is
Samantha.
Samantha, you were there.
I was there just after, a little while later, just after the cops had left, and it was we were doing a peaceful protest, and we continued.
I see you have an anti-Nazi sort of a swastika with a line through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had any confrontations with pro-Nazi groups?
Are you kidding me? I've been yelled at so many times. I've never been, like, physically abused, but I've been threatened about it. I've had a lot of stuff about it. I've had people come to me and yell at me about it. I've had people congratulate me on it. I've had people... I've gotten away from because I was talking to a black cop, and I got away because of it once. I've had pros and cons because of my anti-swastika.
Actual Nazis or people who were white supremacists come up and have any dialogue with you?
My mother's very not. My mother's very, very, very white pride skinhead type, and I've had just calm verbal conversations with her about it. But it could have gotten aggressive, but it's. I try to keep it calm. It's like I try to state that this is my opinion. You have your own opinion. As long as I don't see you hurting other people or whatever, and I don't see anything else happening, that's fine. That's your opinion. I don't care.
Is your mom local?
Yeah, she lives in Watsonville.
So if you two want to come on my show and have a debate, we could probably do that.
No, I don't think you want to have my mom. No, no, you don't want to talk to my mom.
Have you seen much police abuse in the last couple weeks?
Not a couple weeks, but about a year ago, I knew somebody who got their face basically beat in by a cop.
Here in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Yes, it was in Santa Cruz. A street kid said something smart-ass to a cop, and then he was drinking, and the cop came up to him on the bike, and he threw down his beer bottle and put his hands in the air, and then the cop then beat his head in the wall 3 or 4 times. I saw him he just got released, and he had dry blood on the side of his face, a split-open ear, and about 3 brick prints in separate spots just behind his ear.
But it was his account. You didn't see the actual incident.
No, but I...
Who was the cop?
S. Rodriguez. I think his badge number is 275, 279.
Who was the victim?
I only know his name is Tripp. Never got his real first name.
And did Tripp ever... Was he prosecuted for anything, or was he charged with anything?
I think he might have been put in the drunk tank that night, but I guess about a week later, a cop told him, I don't know what the cop's name was, told him that... The God's wrath. He will bring the God's wrath down upon him if he didn't leave town. And so he shaved off all of his dreads and left town instantly.
Was he white, African-American?
He was white. Just a short little white hippie kid. Real okay. Nice.
You haven't heard or seen a lot of police abuse?
That protest the other day, the kid that wouldn't sit down, they took 5 cops to him and tackled him. I got here just afterwards and there was blood on the sidewalk.
Is there still blood on the sidewalk? We're walking over to this incident now.
No, I think it rained, but that might be stains right there and right there. It was bright red and a good smear.
The corner right now, we're kind of right, about 3 or 4 inches, about a foot out from the Union Grove planter here, yeah. Diagonally.
Yeah. It was splotched and smeared across the sidewalk. It was like 3 or 4 dots and smeared across the sidewalk. I wasn't here for him getting tackled, but... I guess he just wouldn't sit down when the cops were asking him to sit down. I guess he thought it was ridiculous that the cops were bothering him for theft of a flag that he didn't steal and wasn't involved in when they were peacefully protesting the anti-Bush thing.
And have police harassed anybody here since, you've noticed?
No, they just come up and stand here and watch us for like 15 minutes and go away. I don't understand what the expensive babysitting's all about, but whatever.
Just doing it for your own good.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Thank you.
No problem. You have a good day.
Talking with...
Samantha.
Thanks, Samantha.
You have a good day.
So, getting back to our original victim. Again, your name is...
Clay.
And Clay Tanner.
Yeah.
You've been charged with...
I got charged with drunk in public and resisting arrest.
And this was the incident that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Or day before yesterday.
Yeah, day before yesterday.
And... Any witnesses here to this whole thing?
Yeah, were you guys there yesterday?
I left early.
Or day before? Yeah, you guys were there day before, right?
Yeah,
I know. But
you already spoke about it, yeah.
Right. Right here, right now.
Dirty was there.
And right. So, have you seen much happening as far as police violence goes since then, or in the last week? Let's put it that way.
In the last week, they've been cracking down. I noticed. My friend Mike fucking burned a flag down here in the corner and fucking they arrested him, busted his face on the concrete. We have pictures of him, like, getting his, you know, nose busted and everything. Like, they picked him up, you know, and, like, took him to jail for, you know, burning a flag or whatever, and, you know, in protest to Bush getting reelected, or if you want to call it elected, I guess, you know.
Any other instances that you've heard of or seen?
Just what happened to me, getting my fucking face drug across the concrete, like fucking my arm busted, fucking, you know, bullshit. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of shit going on these days, if you want to know about it, you know.
Where are you from?
I'm from New Mexico originally.
How long you been in town?
I've been coming back and forth through here about 3 years now. And I've been seeing this shit progress to what it is now. And I don't think these pigs know what's up. I really don't think they know what's going on. They're going to get served pretty soon. Because the way I see it, there's a lot of pissed off people. A lot of fucking pissed off people that are watching what they're doing. They're watching their fucking, you know, their actions. And they're taking it in. And, you know, shit's going to pop. It's going to blow up in their face.
Thank you, Clay. Anything you want to add?
Just fucking fuck police brutality. Fucking viva la resistance. Fucking.
Yeah, America's becoming Gestapo. Definitely. America's becoming way too Gestapo.
We're talking with?
Natasha.
Natasha, anything you've seen you want to talk about independently?
I see violence with the cops and the homeless people all over the place, you know. I mean, anybody who's not a productive member of society, the cops are cracking down on and being hard to. You know, it's unnecessary violence. You know?
What have you seen in the last couple of weeks?
Last couple of weeks I've been pretty much laying low and staying away from fucking cities and towns and stuff, living in the woods. You know, this country's becoming unsafe. I mean, we're a young country and we think we know what's going on, we know how to deal with it, but we're worse than anybody else that's been around for 2,000, 3,000 years, you know? I mean, we're way Gestapo here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is what a police state looks like. This is what a police state looks like.
Thank you. Thank you, Clint. We're talking with Chris. Sorry, Chris. Chris Kinney again. It's about 15 to 4, and you say yesterday you got locked up. How'd that happen?
We weren't locked, but we were told to stay in a room, in an interview room at the police station for 4 hours because my friend Sean Fayless died of alcohol overdose last night, and we found him and called an ambulance in the morning.
Where did you find Sean? How do you spell his last name?
I don't know how to spell his last name.
Fayless?
Fayless. It was under the Soquel Bridge in the fenced-in cage.
And did you know him very well?
Yeah.
How long had you known him for? A
few months.
And was he abusing alcohol?
I suppose, yes.
So what... When did you notice he was dead?
In the morning, when we woke up.
So you called 911?
Yeah, I called 911 myself.
And then what happened?
And then we were expecting the ambulance to come to bring him away, but just a bunch of cops came and took statements from us and then put me and my friend Aaron in the back of the police car and told us we'd be let go. And we weren't let go. They told us they were going to take us down to the police station. And they searched us and put us in handcuffs just to transport us to the police station. And we sat there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, until the detectives finally talked to us.
In handcuffs?
We didn't sit in the interview room in handcuffs, but we were in the cop car in handcuffs.
For how long?
For about 20 minutes. And then when we got to the interview room for about 15 minutes, we were in handcuffs.
Were you intoxicated, obviously, wild and crazy, vomiting all over the place, or were you simply as you are now?
Actually, both of us were completely sober. We had woken up, we found our friend dead, and we walked to the gas station to call an ambulance. And that was it.
For the, you remember the name of the sergeant or the officer who was handling the operation?
I do not.
And you remember the name of the officer who, you look like you have a black eye, that you got that when?
I got that the other night when I fell on a curb.
Because of?
Because I tripped and fell on a curb.
Okay, that doesn't connect to any kind of police abuse.
Not at all.
Your left eye is black, but that's not related to that. You don't remember the names of any of the officers? You don't remember the name of any officers involved?
I know the first name of one of them. It's Wendy.
Wendy Bynes, probably. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it.
Thanks, Chris.
No problem.
Okay, it's about 5 o'clock in front of Border. It's getting a little colder here on Sunday evening. Talking with...
Brian.
Brian, you said something happened to you that was a little unpleasant. Two or three days ago?
Yeah, the cops arrested me because some guy threatened to cut my throat, and I hit him. And they arrested me and let him go and took me to jail for disturbing the peace.
And where was this?
Down the streetlight.
About what time of day or night?
Night, around 7 o'clock.
It's Sunday today. You remember the day?
No.
Thursday, Friday?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Was it day after Election Day, 2 days after Election Day?
I have no idea.
Right. And so what happened? Describe, give me the scene again.
Basically, this guy came up, and he was all drunk, and he was threatening to kick all our asses and shit, and he came up to me and said he was going to slit my throat. So I hit him, and the cops arrested me for disturbing the peace.
Would you say you hit him in self-defense?
Yeah.
Did he make a move to cut your throat?
He like, made a move that made me feel threatened.
And what happened then?
Then I got arrested.
Now, were the police there quickly thereafter, or were they was this a while later?
No, they were there quick. They had their fucking billy clubs out and everything.
And were you hit by the police or just arrested?
No, I was just arrested.
Did anybody else get hit?
No.
How many cops showed up?
About 8.
And what did you tell them?
I told them this guy threatened to cut my throat, and he whirled around like he was going to stab my friend, so I hit him, and they let him go. And
Who was the guy? Did you know his name? Was he differently dressed than you? Was he different color?
Yeah.
Nope.
He was a prisoner. He was an ex-prisoner on parole.
Interesting. Had you seen him before?
No.
And did you hear him explaining his story to the police?
No, I didn't. They were too busy bugging me.
Did anybody advocate for you or stand up for you?
Yeah, a bunch of people did. A bunch of people said they were witnesses and shit, and they still arrested me and let him go.
Got a court date?
Yeah.
When is it?
November 24th.
And you are charged with?
Disturbing the peace.
Sorry about that.
It's
all good. For talking to us, Brian.
All right, bye.
These are a series of interviews you're listening to on Free Radio, www.freakradio.org. Rumor has it we're being rebroadcast by some disreputable pirates on 101.1 FM, but I try to avoid even discussing such rumors, for heaven's sake. You can call in if you have a comment. I'm not going to be able to put you on the air easily. I can probably put you on the air to make a statement. We can't really have much of a dialogue given the way the equipment, now perhaps it's my knowledge of the equipment here, although I think I'm trying to do what's supposed to be done with this equipment, but perhaps I'm not doing it right. Obviously something is wrong. The number here is 427-3772. If you want to leave me a message off air, you can do it on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Got some more interviews coming up. Stay with us, and we're going to take a brief musical break here. Here's a little bit from Opal Sun.
Like a melody, it's haunting me. You're in my memory. You tell a story, telling me of the heart and what it imparts. You tell me, keep it in mind. Never forget you. You see me through. All I wanna do is be with you. I see your face. It's every place. Just the touch of your hand.
So we've listened to some interviews from Elman Pacific, an instance around police intervention that injured at least one man, or let's put it this way, a man was injured in the course of the intervention where the flag-burning protest happened. Another involving an incident which we'll hear an interview later, if I can find it here, where there was a witness down the street who stated that he felt it was the police officer who pushed someone, and then a woman got angry, and that turned into kind of a confrontation and fight between officers and the youth at that corner. And that was one of the instances we heard described where the fellow named Clay was taken to jail. Technically speaking, perhaps those who are sympathetic to police might say, here's a situation where a person, for example, Mike, in the case of the flag burning, declined to sit down, if the account is accurate, and Clay fought back, according to his own testimony, against the police. The question, though, is, obviously, what's the best way to resolve such disputes, and what's actually going on at that corner? Is harassment taking place? Is there legitimate cause for the kind of police surveillance that we've heard described by at least one person there? The ticketing that goes on there, we didn't actually talk about in this interview, but in past interviews I've gotten reports of multiple tickets being given at that corner to youth for panhandling, being within 3 feet of another person who's panhandling. And the question, again, is to me whether groups are being targeted that aren't really engaging in behavior that's hurting or causing concern to the community generally or to other people specifically, other than perhaps those who would like to gentrify the area. And that's one of the issues I have on this. What I have on the phone now is a call from a woman who was concerned about an incident that happened to her on the beach. And I'm going to play that incident. This is I'm going to try to get this. This was recorded on my voicemail sometime a week or two ago. And I'm kind of going back here trying to set it up here. And I think we have it set up here. Hang on. Yeah, we do. Let's see how we're doing.
Hello, my name is Tiffany. And Anne Simonson gave me your number. I was harassed by cops at the beach today for not having my dog on a leash for 2 seconds, and instead of just letting me go on my way, they cornered me, didn't let me leave, ticketed me, and cited me with 2 tickets, one for not having my dog on the leash, one for giving false information because I gave them a different name at first. And I felt really threatened and intimidated, and I was just at the entrance to the beach, and it was first thing in the morning, and it was just all way out of control. and the officer was overzealous and intimidating, and it was frightening. And I just wanted to, she said maybe I should mention it to you, and my number is 425-5. I don't even know if this message is being left because I don't, I think it is, but, anyway, my name is Tiffany Luke, my number is 425-567, and I want to try and do something about this, and I need more information. I think it's...
at 2:18 p.m.
I can't believe what a police state we're living in when you can't even take your dog to the beach in the morning, just woken up without having brushed my teeth or anything, and the first thing that happens to me is a cop runs up to me and tells me to put my dog back on a leash, and have I been written up before, and my dog's already on the leash at this point. I had the leash dangling and told the cop, I'll put her right back on the leash. She just had to go to the bathroom. It's right here. He comes running up to me, has to write me out a ticket and tell me about the penal codes. And his other friend comes over behind me, so I can't leave the beach. And I just say, my dog is on her leash. Can I just leave? We're not even on the beach yet. We just walked through the entrance of the gate. And he says, no, you can't leave. And they're both armed, and they're peace officers. They're peace officers, right? I don't understand that name at all. And but they have the surfboards on the on their trucks, and they're lifeguards, peace officers, but they're full-fledged cop uniforms, and being very intimidating, not allowing me to leave. They've got me surrounded, me and my innocent 12-year-old dog, and proceed to write me a ticket, and I can't afford to pay a fine. I can't even afford to pay my bills living in Santa Cruz. I already have five jobs and a 15-year-old son. And so I give them a false name, big mistake. They call it in to the dispatch, find out that there is no such person. And so now I have a ticket for not having my dog on a leash, which she was only off a leash for a couple seconds, and for giving a peace officer false information. So then they tell me they can take me down to the county jail, that they can arrest me for giving false information and for trying to leave the beach. And so I've got a ticket now, a misdemeanor, and I have to appear in court. I have to appear in court. Can't just pay the fine, which I wouldn't have paid anyway. I would have gone to fight it anyway, but I have to appear in court, and it's a misdemeanor against me, and I have no idea how much the fine is going to be. Something ridiculous. And I had just left my house two blocks from the beach just a few minutes before all this happened. I wasn't even awake. I was just thinking how beautiful the beach looked, and then I get accosted and detained for an hour, like they don't have anything better to do. My house was robbed less than a year ago, and they barely talked to me for 2 minutes on the phone and told me there's nothing they can do. But they have an hour to write me a ticket for my dog being off a leash and then threaten me with the county jail. And I don't know. I'm pretty intimidated by people standing around me with guns first thing in the morning. It scared me, and it was pretty traumatic. And I'm not over it, and I want to do something about it. If anyone else has had any kind of similar experience, I'd love to talk to them about it. And I don't really know where to go from here, but I'm seeking help and really appreciate any input. And thank you to Robert Huff or Robert North. And I hope that as many people who can will please vote for him.
Can avoid the election plug here.
I don't know. If anyone has any input, I'd really appreciate hearing from someone. That's it.
Senate confirmation is expected. Mitch Jeserich, Free Speech Radio News.
Press 1. To save it, press 2. To erase
from Washington State.
both challenging felony voting laws through the Voting Rights Act.
28 at 2:22 p.m.
Hey, Robert, this is Tiffany again. I just wanted to say a couple more things. I'm really angry that we are living in such a police state and that our taxes go to this kind of behavior, and that they actually make money off
something by making this public, because she's presumably giving evidence against herself as well in court proceedings. But she's so concerned that this kind of use of armed lifeguards, if her description is accurate, state police armed lifeguards, is an intimidating factor that's inappropriate in the Santa Cruz scene. And the kind of treatment given her was so intense and so focused. And again, we don't have the account from the other side. We don't have the account from the officers involved. We don't have any independent witnesses. So you can make what you might of this. And I encourage you to give a call. Since that time I spoke to Tiffany, actually right before airtime, she said she's talked to 3 or 4 different people who've had bad experience with the same officer specifically, and hopefully at some point she'll come on the air to talk about it. She has just gotten home from 9 hours working, she said, when I spoke to her this afternoon, and wasn't up to it, but did okay my playing the sections I played on the air. If you've had problems with the police, you have a number of options. The first you need to do is get allies, tell your story to other people, record it. I encourage people to go public with their stories, as you heard here today. You know, it's not, the details don't all fit into a nice pattern. You're not completely in the right in these circumstances in many cases. But the question is the general practice of the police department, and if you're, is a case, an instance of that general practice, going in the right direction or the wrong direction? Not have you had all your I's dotted and all your T's crossed, but are we headed in the right direction here? Or is there something bad going on in a continuing way that we need to address? Obviously, I tend to think the latter. I tend to think there is something bad going on. Not in every case. You know, I'm on amiable terms with many police officers in town. As I've said repeatedly before, I've never been physically abused by police officers in terms of being beaten up or struck. But clearly there are others who say they have and who have been. And there's cases of excessive force where excessive force is used. And the question is it tolerated at a departmental level? And more important than that, or perhaps as important than that, is do police in their day-to-day contacts with people act fairly, or are they selectively enforcing on behalf of one class over another? And my experience, of course, is that the merchants who run this town, and that there's great bias towards them and towards conservative citizenry, and bias against those who are counterculture, poor, African-American, of color, women in many cases, too. I see that happening. What do you see happening? You know, if you want to call in and make a statement on this, I can't really dialogue with you because of the bad phone line, but certainly you can make a statement if you'd like to, 427-3772. The chat room is working with a chat room creator, John, who's actually on the chat room kind of monitoring it. Thanks, John. And be happy to hear from you if you want, or possibly you might want to call during the next show, which is Sunday, between 9:30 and 1, when we will hopefully have a really operational two-way phone line that goes in and out, and you can actually hear both of us at the same time, both you and myself, if you're the caller calling in. So, a kind of a brief side trip here. There was a city council meeting 2 days ago. Most people may not have known about it. It wasn't particularly well publicized. There wasn't a lot of particularly high-profile stuff that came up at that meeting, and it was only an afternoon session. It happened at 3 o'clock. Usually there are two sessions to the Tuesday City Council meetings. They happen at 3 and at 7. Usually at 7 there's what's called the oral communications or public comment section, where you can actually, in theory, stand in line to speak for 3 minutes on a subject of your own choosing and not be cut off. Of course, if you have a Fuck the Police t-shirt, as I did the day that a man got a ticket for having that little sign, Fuck the Police, in his cap, they will cut your mic and they will tell you, they will tell the cameras not to photograph your t-shirt. At least that was the case under Mayor Emily Riley, who was the top vote-getter in this last election. However, in theory, you have the right to say what you want, and she was, of course, violating the Brown Act. course, no one held her to account because who has the money to go around hiring an attorney and dealing with this situation and taking it through the Bush-Clinton court system. Kind of a difficult row to hoe here, or I might say the Art Danner court system here in Santa Cruz. Still, you should know what your rights should be, and the community, when it comes together to enforce those rights, often can do so, because powerful as the conservative entrenched establishment faction is in this town, it nonetheless has to worry that there's a majority of people who are treated badly, who don't really want to tolerate it. I mean, if they get together and reach out for each other and come together, then things begin to happen. So, City Council had a meeting on Tuesday, to get back to the original subject, and I was there, as were a couple other folks. I was there primarily to present a resolution to the City Council about the war in Iraq, and I've actually passed that resolution around both on hard copy and on the email to folks. If you want a copy of it, you can go to the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, and it's posted there. And I encourage you to call the City Council and tell them you want to support it. And the resolution is kind of a long-winded thing. It comes from the city of Arcata, which passed it some months ago, or another version of it, which called for U.S. troops to get out of Iraq. They also called for them to get out of Afghanistan. I simplified it and limited it to Iraq and put it out there, brought it to City Council. Now, I'm not going to really talk about or play at this point the dialogue that happened around that, because the only dialogue that happened were three speeches supporting it from myself, activist Marilyn Garrett, environmental activist, and human rights activist Bernard Klitzner, all three of whom went up to the mic and said something in favor of it. And I think Michael Tomasi, the resident king of the trolls, as he describes himself, also supported it. But not a single council member had a word positive to say about it, or anything to say about it whatsoever, though I think this resolution arguably has the support of a majority of people in the city of Santa Cruz. And I will actually be reading it. Perhaps what I should do is actually go there right now and give you some indication of what it is. I think I will. I think I'll read it. The resolution is as I said, it was originally written or presented by Dave Meserve, who is one of the Green Party Arcata City Councilmen. Actually, the Greens now have a majority on the Arcata City Council. And the resolution reads as follows. In the belief that only by speaking out can we hope to change the world, whereas the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq is founded on the lie that Saddam possessed and was poised to use weapons of mass destruction, that he was involved in 9/11, is a calculated step in long-term military plans for American world domination that include controlling areas that are rich in precious resources like oil, setting up strategic military control of nations such as Iraq, enforcing America's will anywhere in the world with little or no provocation. Whereas the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq is enriching corporations that have ties to this administration by the granting of exclusive contracts to rebuild infrastructure, whereas it is in violation of the process required to declare war under the U.S. Constitution, whereas it is in violation of international law, including the U.N. Charter, the Geneva Accords, and the Nuremberg Principles, and therefore in violation of the U.S. constitutional provision for treaties as equal to the highest law of the land, whereas it has provoked ever more rage among victims of the wars and has increased the likelihood of further attacks rather than making us safer, whereas it has resulted in the deaths of over 1,150 U.S. soldiers, this time it was 1,100 actually U.S. soldiers, who all died for no good reason fighting to support lawless war policies based upon the lies of our president and his inner circle, whereas it has resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of civilians, estimated recently by John Hopkins medical researchers to be 100,000 or more, whose only crime was to be in the path of U.S. attacks, whereas it has physically and psychologically injured hundreds of thousands of innocents, whereas it has, in violation of international law, destroyed the infrastructure of Iraq, whereas it has lowered our esteem among the nations and peoples of the earth, whereas it has cost taxpayers over $200 billion, which amounts to over $700 for every man, woman, and child in America, to over $35 million For the city of Santa Cruz, nearly half the annual general fund budget, which could have bought universal health care for every American, that $200 billion. Therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Santa Cruz calls for the immediate withdrawal of all American troops from Fallujah until the end of the invasion of that city on the eve of elections, the immediate withdrawal of all American troops from Iraq before one more soldier or civilian needlessly dies, concurrent with the United States government turning over to groups representative of different factions in Iraq, including insurgents, with the help of the United Nations, the League of Arab States, and other neutral parties, the authority for creating and maintaining peace and order there, with the goal of providing security and allowing the Iraqis to settle their own affairs and reclaim their own resources. Be it further resolved that the City Council of Santa Cruz calls for a full and open international bidding process in all future awards of contracts for reconstruction or other goods and services within Iraq, full benefits and support for veterans when they return, with particular attention to our own local veterans made ill, homeless, or disabled by involvement in this war or the prior Iraqi invasion. This resolution to be sent to Congressman Sam Farr, Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, and President George W. Bush. This was the resolution presented to City Council 2 days ago. Their reaction was to do absolutely nothing. Now, you might say, well, it's kind of late. You're bringing it up late in the day. It wasn't even on the agenda. True enough. But, of course, Fallujah had been invaded 2 days before. I guess we're now on the fourth day of that invasion. And in response to that, I presented what's called urgency findings. The Santa Cruz City Council resolutions require 72-hour notice regularly to the public before they can be considered and voted on. However, an urgency matter can be voted on with a supermajority of 5 out of the 7 council members, provided there's also an urgency finding, which they accept, which indicates why it couldn't have been done, let's say, last week, more than 72 hours before, and put on the agenda in the usual fashion. And here were the urgency findings I presented to the council, which they could have, had they wished, could have accepted. Whereas the continued war and occupation of Iraq causes both direct and indirect financial and physical injury to the people of Santa Cruz through funding lost for virtually needed housing, social services, and public safety needs. Whereas citizens from the area are directly involved in the war in Iraq, either as soldiers, contractors, or family of people involved there. Whereas the expanding toll of soldier deaths has recently impacted this county directly with the deaths of Morgan Jacobs and Victor Gonzalez. Whereas the human and financial cost of caring for veterans disabled or injured by the unnecessary war there is an outrageous and unnecessary result of this endless war. Whereas the U.S. invasion of the Iraqi city of Fallujah began 2 days ago, too late for this council to have put the matter on its regular agenda. Whereas members of the Santa Cruz community may lose loved ones in this unnecessary and immoral assault. Whereas immediate action by the city and by the government of the United States will save lives, therefore, the following resolution urging an immediate end to the bombing and invasion of Fallujah and withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq needs to be passed as quickly as possible as an urgency matter, in essence, is what I said. And that same resolution is posted on the Indy Media website. You can view it. It has a few typos, for which I apologize, but the gist of it is, I think, imminently sound and overdue, and something Santa Cruz should have passed a year and a half ago. Now, some of you may say, well, didn't they pass a resolution asking the U.S. not to go into Iraq? Weren't they one of the first cities, the Santa Cruz City Council, to do that? And the answer is yes, they were. That was in the fall of 2002. But what they did not do, what they started to do, what they prepared 2 resolutions for in the spring of 2003 after Bush had gone in, was a resolution calling for the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops. That was not done. Even though Ed Porter, I believe, perhaps it was Fitzmaurice, prepared 1 resolution, which was presented at the Civic Auditorium town hall meeting. It wasn't a town hall meeting, actually. It was just a big meeting of the city council there. And then a second resolution was presented by Scott Kennedy, a long resolution, very articulate, full of specific, interesting details. But under the mayorship of Scott Kennedy, well, after the mayorship first of Emily Riley and then of Scott Kennedy, both these resolutions disappeared without a trace. You actually cannot find the Kennedy resolution anywhere. You can go to the city council offices. I tried to find it, and I couldn't. I found an old copy that I picked up the night that he presented it. But it's not available as an agenda item, an old item on the minutes. It's no longer anywhere. And the council has been in complete silence on the war in Iraq for the last year and a half. Of course, so is Representative Sam Farr, except for saying it was a mistake. Well, we need more than the statement that it was a mistake. We need action, setting this city on record as being for the immediate withdrawal, as Arcata is, of all U.S. troops there. We need to sound a chord that other cities throughout the country respond to and take action on that has some impact nationwide, because it's going to only be by direct, strong protests that we're going to get this country out of that war and avoid getting into another one. What's been happening over in Iraq? I've got a couple of articles I wanted to pass on. Here's a story from The Guardian, the London Guardian. The only place I'm going to from here is heaven. Yemeni tells how he left his family to join the fighting. Gaith Abul Ahad in Fallujah, Thursday, November 11th, 2004. That's today. From inside a room in one of Fallujah's safe houses came a beautiful voice reciting verses from the Quran and choking with tears. If your fathers, your sons, your brothers, your wives, your tribe, your fortunes, and your trade are more dear to your hearts than God, his prophet, and the jihad in the name of God, chanted the voice, be fearful of God then. He will never talk to the wrongdoers. The room was half-lit. The walls were bare except for one picture of Mecca. The only piece of furniture was a prayer mat in the middle of the room, twisted at an angle to face the south. A Kalashnikov rifle and an ammunition pouch were laid against the wall. A pair of old trainers stood at the edge. On the mattress sat a man with a small Quran in one hand and a set of prayer beads in the other. Sometimes his voice would be drowned out by the sounds of explosions rocking the city. As he finished his prayers, he stood up, held his hands high, and started praying, O God, you who made the prophet come out victorious in his wars against infidels, make us come out victorious in our war against America. O God, defeat America and its allies everywhere. O God, make us worthy of your religion. The man, tall, thin, with a dark complexion, black eyes, and a thin beard, arrived in Fallujah 6 weeks ago. He spent a few days sharing a room with other fighters until they were distributed among the Mujahideen units in the city. He was with a group of the Tawhid and Jihad stationed in the west of Fallujah in the Jolan district, where heavy fighting has been raging for the last 2 days. Living with other Arab and Iraqi fighters, he was given the honor of leading the prayers because of his beautiful voice. Anxiously waiting for the Americans outside a makeshift bunker, he told his story. He said he was not here because he loved death as death, but because he perceived martyrdom as the most pure way in which to worship God. He was, he said, a Yemeni religious student from the capital, Sana'a, who had been supporting Sharia law for 6 years while working as minibus driver to support a pregnant wife and 5 children. He first tried to come to Iraq to fight the Americans during the war 18 months ago. I wanted to come and fight for Islam. I met a Jordanian merchant who provided me with tickets to Syria and $100. He even drove me to the airport himself. Sent back. Once he was there, he was prevented from going any further by the airport police. I was wearing my jalabiya and a small turban, and when the police asked me why I was going to Damascus, I said, to work. They asked me what kind of work. I said, to work for the salvation of my soul, and they sent me back. He pointed at his cheap cotton trousers and said, this time I learned the lesson and bought these. For a year he went back to his studies and his family, forgetting Iraq and jihad, but the scandal of prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib woke him up, he said. His wife, a religious student working on her master's thesis, urged him to leave everything and go for jihad in Iraq. She told me they are doing this to the men. Imagine what is happening to the women now. Imagine your sisters and me being raped by the infidel American pigs. He suddenly realized his mistake, he said. And by the way, I haven't heard of any specific cases of Iraqi women raped by Americans, although there have been cases of course, the rape of people metaphorically. And I guess prisoners being forced to rape each other inside Abu Ghraib. So I'm interrupting this Guardian story to point that out. He suddenly realized his mistake, he said, and spent the night crying. The next day he borrowed money for another journey, and one that he described as his last. He was given a contact name in Aleppo, a city in the north of Syria, who would arrange for him to be smuggled across the border. I didn't tell anyone, I just told my wife. I borrowed a car from a friend, and we went out to do some shopping. She bought me 2 trousers and a shirt. We went then to my father's house. I told my mother, forgive me if I had done anything wrong. She said, why? I told her nothing. I just want forgiveness from you and Dad. She asked me if I was going to Baghdad. I said, no. She hugged me and cried. The fighter told how he went back home and sat with his wife and children, who had no idea that this was their last dinner with their father. My favorite daughter came and sat in my lap and slept there. She opened her eyes and said, "Daddy, I love you." Weeping as he spoke, he said, "You know, these memories are the work of the devil trying to soften my heart and bring me back home. The only place I'm going from here is heaven." When he arrived in Damascus, he learned from other jihadi networks that the Syrians had tightened security on the border. Other would-be mujahideen were waiting in small apartments in Damascus, Aleppo, and Homs. After a month, he realized that the cleric who was running the smuggling network was working with the Syrian Mukhabarat, the secret service, handing over the mujahideen to the police. He fled, but in a small mosque in Aleppo, he met a young cleric who promised to help him reach Iraq. The Yemeni was handed to another group, which placed him in a small house with other jihadis for 2 weeks. One night he was taken to a village on the Syrian side of the border in the north. They came and said, "We are crossing today." It was a very scary journey. We had to lie still in the desert if we heard American helicopters. We spent 2 nights on the border in a village. Then we were taken to another village to be given military training. Most of the brothers with me have never used a weapon in their life. I knew how to use an AK-47. After a few days, they came and said, "We need fighters to go to Hit, a town northwest of Baghdad." There he joined a minibus filled with Arab fighters driving through the night. They were escorted by 2 cars, he said, including a police car. He produced his Quran from his pocket. "When I was in Syria, I bought 7 copies of this, wrote the name of my wife and my 5 children on each, and left the 7th empty. I didn't impose a name for the newborn on my wife. She called me later when I was preparing to cross and told me she had written on it, Shahid, martyr." And that is some of the mentality of the folks who have come to Fallujah, these so-called foreign fighters, to fight. Though the story is a little deceptive, because I think the great majority of people in Fallujah who are resisting this U.S. occupation are not foreigners, but Iraqis. Here's a story from The Guardian. Fallujah, there is no rationale for the invasion. The assault finds little support in the region's press. And these are quotes from different papers in the Arabian area, the Arabian Peninsula. Here's an editorial from the United Arab Emirates, November 10th, Gulf News. "As the city of Fallujah came under full-scale military attack on Tuesday, one must question the reasoning behind launching the offensive and wonder at the cost. With more than 15,000 U.S., British, and Iraqi government forces, the U.S.-led offensive is intended to reestablish government control before next January's elections. No doubt this is a decisive moment for both the occupation and the occupied. Any future relationship will be defined not by the final outcome of the attack, but by the final casualty count and the level of destruction. In the end, it is the innocent Iraqis who are paying the price. The real question is whether the Fallujah offensive, which is named as Operation Dawn al-Fajr, will mark dusk rather than a dawn." And here's Gulf Times, editorial Qatar, November 10th. "Perhaps the destruction of Fallujah is meant to be a lesson to the Sunnis, just as the gassing of Halabja and the draining of the marshes were Saddam Hussein's lesson to the Kurds and the Marsh Arabs, respectively. But tanks cannot win political battles. Washington's only hope was to conquer the insurgents through peaceful persuasion, all attempts at which seem now to have been abandoned. America's overwhelming military might will silence the insurgents' guns in Fallujah, but nothing will have changed. The anger that is driving the insurgency will still be in place and may well be stronger than ever." And this from Samir Ragab, Al-Samouhria, Egypt, November 10th. "What did the inhabitants of Fallujah do to deserve this fierce attack? What makes our hearts bleed is the participation of the Iraqi government in committing such a massacre by backing the U.S. occupation forces and encouraging them to kill innocent Iraqis. Arab and Muslim countries must achieve unity in sending the message that terrorism can never be brought to an end by imposing ready-made recipes on Middle East countries." This from Al-Watan, an editorial from Saudi Arabia, November 9th. "The U.S. forces are expected to increase their barbaric acts in the hope of finishing off once and for all the Iraqi resistance so they can have peace and realize their aims, foremost of which is the rearrangement of the country in such a way that would enable their new allies to hide behind a false legitimacy, which they will use to open a new phase in the final word, and the final word will be that of the ruling gang in Tel Aviv." And this via BBC monitoring Al-Quds, Al-Arabi, London. "There is no rationale whatsoever for the invasion of Fallujah. The attack is basically to express schadenfreude at the Iraqis and get even with them. However, as we are in the holy month of Ramadan, we would like to say here that such an aggression against the innocents will not be accepted by God, and that there is another superpower up there monitoring developments. And this, the Jerusalem Post says, this battle is a critical one for the future of Iraq, which has become a crucial test in the global war against militant Islamism. Though the government is indeed backed by foreign coalition forces, the terrorist war is, if anything, a more foreign attempt to hijack Iraq's future. The terrorists are not really fighting to evict the Americans, though they would consider that a great victory, but to prevent Iraq from forming a stable democratic government. We suspect that the great majority of Iraqis, having tasted freedom from Saddam, do not want to emulate either the theocracy in Iran or the more secular dictatorships typical of the rest of the Arab world. The terrorists realize that their fight is indivisible. Free people should realize that the fight of the Marines in Fallujah is theirs as well. That sounds like an Israeli paper. So, and finally, we have an article here. In Fallujah, U.S. declares war on hospitals, ambulances, by Brian Dominic. This was first published in the London paper, The New Standard. I think it's London. And I got it from www.dissidentvoice.org. In a series of actions over the weekend, the United States military and Iraqi government destroyed a civilian hospital in a massive air raid, captured the main hospital, and prohibited the use of ambulances in the besieged city of Fallujah. Saturday morning, witnesses in Fallujah reported that an overnight airstrike by U.S. fighter crews had completely razed a trauma clinic, which was recently constructed using Saudi donations. Also destroyed were two adjacent facilities used by healthcare providers. Now, I've heard most of this confirmed by reports from Reuters, the BBC, and even mainstream U.S. media, radio media, and some print media like the Chronicle and the Mercury News. Continuing with the article, a Reuters photograph of the devastation shows only a sign that reads, Nazal Emergency Hospital, still standing. There have been mixed reports of injuries and deaths resulting from the bombing. Iraqi Prime Minister Iyad Alawi has ordered that everyone except Iraqi and U.S. troops observe a strict curfew in Fallujah and nearby Ramadi, though it is unclear how well the directive has been conveyed to residents or if an exemption has been made for medical personnel in accordance with international law. It is also unclear how non-combatants will be able to observe a strict curfew when much of the city's running water and electricity has been cut off, according to several witnesses, including Fadil Badrani, a Fallujah resident who is issuing regular reports to the BBC. On Sunday, Marines said they would use the curfew to their tactical advantage, effectively designating any and all moving civilian vehicles to be free-fire targets. Normally, U.S. troops are expected to establish that a target is hostile before engaging. But Colonel Mike Ramos told National Public Radio that U.S. Marines have been relieved of meeting that requirement, saying invasion forces will order all vehicles off the roads of Fallujah for the duration of their offensive. Colonel Ramos added, if a Marine feels it is necessary to protect the lives of his fellow Marines, he is empowered to engage a moving vehicle. He is empowered to destroy whatever needs to be destroyed. In contrast, standard rules of engagement, which were written based on international law, dictate that troops determine a target is actually a threat, but make no mention of how the soldier feels. Addressing reporters on Monday, U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said he expects minimal civilian casualties and insisted U.S. troops could have been issued rules of engagement that are appropriate to an urban, that they have been issued rules of engagement that are appropriate to an urban environment. In a May interview with the News Standard, a U.S. Marines Corps spokesperson refused to explain specific incidents of U.S. Marines attacking Iraqi emergency vehicles, but said that any ambulances the Marines fired on must have been involved in carrying insurgents or arms, or else the Marines would not have opened fire. U.S. and Iraqi officials have not indicated whether ambulances will be allowed to move freely throughout the city, but during the siege of the city in April, U.S. troops fired on Iraqi ambulances on a number of occasions. At least two were completely demolished prior to the current assault, one by Marines in April and another in September airstrike. A Fallujah General Hospital official told Arab News and other agencies that a driver, a medic, and five patients died in the latter incident. Photographs reinforced those claims. General Hospital seized. Early Monday morning, Iraqi commandos stormed and seized the Fallujah General Hospital, the city's main health care facility, and the first reported ground operation carried out against the city during the renewed offensive. During the raid, they reportedly detained some 50 patients, about 25 of whom were arrested. This is the second time Marines have sealed off the hospital. Fallujah General is located on the western edge of the Euphrates River, separating it from the rest of the city. Throughout the siege in April, Marines prevented ambulances and other vehicles from transporting sick or injured people to what was at that time, and after Saturday night's bombing, is once more the city's only trauma-capable health care facility. Today, Dr. Salith Al-Issawi, the director of Fallujah General, told the South African Press Association that U.S. Marines were again preventing ambulances from delivering patients to emergency care. Al-Issawi said he believed that the U.S. military thought they would halt medical assistance to the resistance by taking his hospital. But, said Al-Issawi, they did not realize that the hospital does not belong to anyone, especially the resistance. The Fourth Geneva Convention plainly states civilian hospitals organized to give care to the wounded and sick, the infirm and maternity cases, may in no circumstances be the object of attack, but shall at all times be respected and protected by the parties to the conflict. Dr. Al-Issawi told Agence France-Presse that Marines would not let him or other hospital staff move to another facility inside Fallujah in order to be of actual help to the people of the city. Of the estimated 30,000 to 100,000 who remain in Fallujah after most of its 280,000-strong population left during October in an exodus of terror, many are presumed to be infirm, impoverished, or otherwise unable to escape the offensive. The entire city must now rely on two or three small clinics, if they can reach care at all, to provide for the sick and wounded. Another physician, Dr. Hashim Issawi, who works at a clinic inside Fallujah, reported that a lack of water, electricity, and ambulances has made providing emergency care all but impossible, according to AFP. Dr. Issawi reported that his clinic's ambulance was destroyed during airstrikes on Sunday. Ambulances have also been confiscated, he said. We lack material and equipment. Another doctor at Fallujah General, Sami Al-Jamali, told Reuters, there is not a single surgeon in Fallujah. We had one ambulance hit by U.S. fire and a doctor wounded. There are scores of injured civilians in their homes whom we can't move, Al-Jamali continued. A 13-year-old child just died in my hands. The U.S. military has not stated if it intends to destroy or capture any remaining healthcare facilities. The Pentagon has made little attempt to explain its repeated attacks on medical personnel and infrastructure. Nevertheless, numerous reporters embedded with the Marines have been told that Fallujah General Hospital was seized to enable care providers to do their jobs unimpeded and to prevent hospital officials from providing inflated death counts to the media as the offensive is underway. During the April fighting, hospital officials periodically informed the press that U.S. Marines were killing massive numbers of civilians who were then being counted by local clinics in the hospital. The United States government media blamed those reports, which were never shown to be inaccurate, but have in fact been upheld by independent analysts, as contributing to the widespread unrest that erupted across Iraq during the siege. The Fourth Geneva Convention offers no provision permitting the seizure of healthcare facilities in order to prevent hospital officials from releasing statements, whether true or false, to the public. In fact, the only relevant article states, the occupying power may requisition civilian hospitals only temporarily and only in cases of urgent necessity for the care of militarily wounded and sick, and then on condition that suitable arrangements are made in due time for the care and treatment of the patients. Since the U.S. military has established its own rearguard medical facilities, and since the seizure of Fallujah General marked the first objective of the ground invasion, it is unlikely that the criteria of urgent necessity for the care of militarily wounded has been met. Additionally, the News Standard has so far been unable to find reports that rebels or terrorists have inhibited the provision of health care to those in need at Fallujah General. The only reports of such obstruction cite constraints placed on the facility by U.S. personnel. It's a story by Brian Dominic, who is the Middle East editor at the New Standard, where this article first appeared. Another article, U.S. toll mounts as Fallujah battles rage. And this is from Al Jazeera, Friday, 12th of November. It's dated tomorrow, but it's 031 Maka time, 2131 GMT. The U.S. military assault of Fallujah entered its fourth day. This is about 5 hours ago. Two U.S. Super Cobra gunship helicopters have been downed in separate incidents near Fallujah, U.S. military spokesman said. A previously unknown group, the Green Brigade, member of the 1920 Revolution Brigades, claimed responsibility for downing one of the helicopters. U.S. officials said on Thursday that 18 soldiers have been killed since U.S.-led troops launched their latest attack on Fallujah on Monday. Al Jazeera also reported that five Iraqi National Guards were killed while another 34 were wounded since the 9th of November. In a sign of mounting U.S. casualties, more than 100 American soldiers seriously wounded during the Fallujah offensive arrived at the United States' main European military hospital in Germany, apparently not yet confiscated by German authorities, emulating the U.S. Sorry, a little sarcastic aside by me. I get kind of pissed when hospitals are taken or bombed by U.S. forces. And medical surgical wards to cope with the stream of its patients, as the hospital has expanded its intensive care unit in Germany and medical surgical wards. The U.S. military flew 102 patients in two plane loads to the hospital with a further two planes of wounded due on Friday, spokeswoman Marie Shaw said. This is one of our peak periods. We are very busy. It is more than we have seen in the last couple of months because we used to admit about 30 patients a day, Shaw said. Increasing numbers of wounded U.S. troops are being evacuated. Thursday's arrivals joined 125 wounded who arrived from Monday to Wednesday, including 70 on Wednesday. Landstuhl is the usual destination for seriously injured U.S. troops stationed in Iraq or Afghanistan. They have all kinds of injuries, explosion, blast injuries, gunshot wounds, she said. It is possible that some intensive care patients have also suffered amputated limbs, she said. Upsurge in violence. In other developments, Al Jazeera has learned that four Iraqi policemen were injured as a result of an explosion of a booby-trapped car driven by a bomber in central Hilla city. Another car also exploded inside a petrol station along the highway between Hilla and Musayib. Also on Thursday, the police chief of Babil province escaped an assassination attempt carried out by a group of armed men using light weapons. The attack on police stations in Mosul seemed well coordinated in one of their most daring attacks to date. Masked fighters stormed six Iraqi police stations in Mosul, 370 miles north of Baghdad, seizing weapons and torching buildings, an AFP correspondent in the city said. A group of men pulled up in front of the police stations in various parts of the city on Thursday, forcing policemen out in what appeared to be a coordinated attack. Dozens of people were seen fanning out in the city streets, and some hunkered behind sandbags and were seen firing mortar rounds on U.S. and Iraqi forces stationed on four of Mosul's five main bridges. Speaking on Monday, the same day that the massive attack was launched in the city of Fallujah, Iraq's Defense Minister Hazim Shallan vowed a campaign in Mosul. We will launch operations in Mosul because some groupings that came from neighboring Western countries are trying to step up terror operations there, he said, referring to Syria. A U.S. general also hinted at further offensives after the Battle for Fallujah, the largest military operation since last year's U.S.-led invasion. Iraq seeks to curb press freedoms. Again, another story from Al Jazeera. The media has been used to exercise caution while reporting. Iraq's media regulator has warned news organizations to stick to the government line on the U.S.-led attack in Fallujah or face legal action. Invoking a 60-day state of emergency declared by Iraq's interim government ahead of the assault currently underway, Iraq's media high commission on Thursday demanded news media distinguish between fighters and residents of Fallujah. The authority set up by the former U.S. governor of Iraq is intended to be independent of the government to encourage investment in the media and deter state meddling after decades of strict control under Saddam Hussein. However, the commission's statement sent to various media outlets during the day bore the letterhead of the Iraqi Prime Minister's office. And I'm going to finish the story up because I think I hear a knocking at the door, but should be done in just a moment here. It said all media organizations operating in Iraq should differentiate between the innocent Fallujah residents who are not targeted by military operations and terrorist groups that infiltrated the city and held its people hostage under the pretext of resistance and jihad. It also asked media to set aside space near news coverage to make the position of the Iraqi government clear. We hope you comply. Otherwise, we regret we'll be forced to take all the legal measures to guarantee the higher national interests. Wow. I think I hear someone scratching with their claws at the door. Hang on here. Let's put this aside and put on a little music while I investigate the question of what beasts are roaming the studio. That kind of defy the national trends in the State House. Mm-hmm.
walking down an Alabama road, remembering what the Bible told. Walking with a letter in his hand, dreaming of another southern land. Walking down an Alabama road, and he went by the name of William Moore. Now what are you doing, William Moore? Why, the letter in your hand, there's only one southern land. And he went by the name of William Moore. What price the glory of one man? What price the glory of one man? What price the hopes? What price the dreams? And what price the glory of one man? Remembering what his grandfather done, fought for the South in 61. 100 years have passed by since then. Now a Moore is fighting for the South again. Remembering what his grandfather done. Remembering the time in World War II and the South Pacific Island that he knew. Remembering the young men that he killed and the praying that the guns of hate be still. Remembering the time in World War II. What price the glory of one man? What price the glory of one man? What price the hopes? What price the dreams? And what price the glory of one man? And they shot him on the Alabama road, forgot about what the Bible told. They shot him with that letter in his hand, as though he were a dog and not a man. They shot him on the Alabama road. Did you say it was a shame when he died? Did you say he was a fool because he tried? Did you wonder who had fired the gun? Did you know that it was you that fired the gun? Did you say it was a shame when he died? What price the glory of one man? What price the glory of one man? What price the hopes? What price the dreams? And what price the glory of one man? Walking down an Alabama road.
Yeah, that was Phil Oakes' Ballad of William Moore, who was, I think he was a postman who was shot walking through the South in the early 60s trying to urge desegregation and equal rights for everyone, including African Americans. That's it for Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, but I will introduce briefly, give you kind of a taste of what's going to be happening on Sunday. In the studio with me visiting is Jerry Henry and Jason. Guys, why don't you belly up to this other mic and say hello.
Well, hello.
This is the man whose voice you could not hear at the beginning of the show because we have a difficult phone connection. You might pull up a chair and sit down briefly. Uncle Dennis will be joining us very momentarily. We're going to have to be out of here, and we're preparing to do that. But what are you going to be talking about on Sunday if you come back?
Oh, it's DiCenzo. He's just DiCenzo's gone off the hook, man, with this comic strip and portraying Genie, disabled people the way he's portrayed them. It's passed the realm into hate journalism. I encourage everybody to get their copy and make sure it hits the garbage can.
And
I think that's what the Metro deserves. Until they trash DiCenzo, they need to be trashed.
Yeah, I was saying with respect to DiCenzo. Jason, you got any comment about that? Or?
I just second that.
Okay. Come in. Open that door. I think
sounds
it's the FCC.
Like
FCC, come in, FCC.
Sounds like we're going to be ousted right
now. All right. So thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. And we're going to now go into a little music set while Dennis sets up. And hope we'll see you on Sunday to talk some more.
Oh, I wanted. This just got me going.
I got you.
I think DiCenzo's gone off the scale.
Indeed.
All right, that is Wrangler Brutes off their brand new LP.
Thanks for being with us on this edition of Bathurst Affairs Broadsides. Back on Sunday at 9:30. Call the Huff line between times if you're interested, 423-HUFF, and I will get back to you.
Find members of Signal Lost, and they're going to be on the show a little bit later to play some of the...
Oh, you tell me that there's danger to this land you call your own. And you watch them build the war machines right beside your home. And you tell me that you're ready to go marching to the war. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Before you pack your rifle, go sail across the sea. Just think upon the southern part of land that you call free. Oh, there's many kinds of slavery, and we've found many more. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And before you walk out on your job in answer to the call, just think about the millions who have no job at all. And the men who wait for handouts with their eyes upon the floor. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And read your morning papers, read every single line. And tell me if you can believe that simple world you find. Read every slanted word till your eyes are getting sore. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Listen to your leaders, the ones that won the race, as they stand there right before you and lying to your face. If you ever try to buy them, you know what they stand for. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Put ragged clothes upon your back and sleep upon the ground. And tell police about your rights as they drag you down. And ask them as they lead you to some deserted door. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? But the hardest thing I'll ask you, if you will only try, is take your children by their hands and look into their eyes. And there you'll see the answer you should have seen before. If you'll win the wars at home, there'll be no fighting anymore.
Have thoughts. just like any other one. Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some foolish thing, some little sinful thing I've done. Understood. Yes, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Yes, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find in the year 3535. Gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555. Your arms are hanging limp at your sides. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine's doing that for you. In the year 6565, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too. From the bottom of a long glass tube, whoa, whoa. It's time for the judgment day. In the year 8510, God is gonna shake his mighty head. He'll either say I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Whoa, whoa. In the year 9595, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing, whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years, man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna be no time.
sing it like it. We'll get your lover and a feel and rock it. We'll run a lover and a groove on us now. You'll become a ready feel and rock it. Run it over, run off of Beethoven, cause I got to the news. Whee! Feeling like it, we'll get your lover and a feel and rock it, roll it over and